In case you haven't heard, it's officially an Abercrombie summer. The A&F Vacation Shop has everything on your packing mood board. I desperately need their new one piece, the A&F Marina. It's strapless, so flattering, and paired with denim shorts will be my go-to beach outfit this summer. Finally, your suitcase isn't complete without finding that dress. You know, the one for the photo shoot. Abercrombie's boho dresses have that perfect beachy romantic look. Make it an Abercrombie summer. Shop their newest arrivals in-store, online, and in the app.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail. Companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop. And hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest of my podcast today is Andy Mowat, CEO of Gated.
There are 10,000 tools helping sellers and marketers pummel buyers.
Yeah.
We are not building the 10,000th and first tool. We're building the first tool for buyers. Building a trusted brand is a tremendous opportunity. I believe that the world needs what we're doing, especially when you think about ChatGPT and how more and more emails are sent every day. So yes, imagine a world where instead of 100 emails getting sent and 2 replies, 10 emails get sent and 5 replies.
This is Andy. He spent his career building sales and marketing engines for world-beating companies. He created and scaled a customer success operation team to drive operational improvements for all post-sale services at Box. And in 2017, he became the Vice President of Go-to-Market Operations and Growth Marketing at CultureAmp, where he drove 10x growth in ARR. He has completed an MBA at Stanford and has a Bachelor of Arts degree in International Economics from Princeton University. In June 2021, he co-founded Gated, which he leads as a CEO. Their mission? To fix email for both buyers and sellers, and to do some good for the world. And this inspired me, and hence I invited Andy to my podcast. We explore what's broken in the way we use email. Andy explains his vision on how we can give everyone control back and make real communication happen. He shares his big lessons learned on taking Gated from zero to where they are today, growing at 20% per month. He then elaborates on his approach to monetization, to keep the tool free for those that get most value, and how that creates network effects. Lastly, he talks about crossing the chasm and what big lessons that told him. By listening to this podcast, you will learn 4 things. Firstly, what remarkable solutions we can create when you take the viewpoint of the underserved receiver of your service output. Secondly, why you cannot start early enough thinking about building virality into your product. Thirdly, how to build a movement around your startup. And lastly, why it's critical to cast a vision that doesn't lock you in, and how to go about it. Well, hi, Andy. Thank you for making the time available today and being a guest on the podcast.
It's terrific to meet.
Yeah, and it's an interesting way how we actually met because of the fact that I reached out to a person that is using your product and I got Gated. And funny enough, I decided to make a donation to get through the gate and a very interesting conversation started. Person will actually be on my podcast in a couple of weeks.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah, exactly. It was a fantastic conversation starter. And that's how we at the end got connected. And yeah, when I heard about your company and the mission that you're on, I thought it was a fantastic story to cover on the podcast because it's for tech entrepreneurs on a mission, right?
Yes, that's really neat. I am on a mission. Like I've spent 20 years hammering email. I've done it for 3 unicorns. I've sent billions of emails. And I think we realized there's a fundamental flaw in email, which is it doesn't cost anything to reach you. You don't control your inbox. And no one's thinking about sender incentives. Everyone's thinking, how do I sell you another tool to manage the mess faster or better? And I think what we're really thinking is, how do we push people to think this relevant to Ton or to whoever I'm sending it to before I send it, or like right after I send it, do I really want to take that extra step to get that in? And I think the impact of what we're doing is dramatically reducing the noise for both sides. And what that means is real connections happen.
Yeah, exactly. Before we start on that, a little bit about you. What drives you? What gives you energy?
You know, I love playing with things and experimentation and data and systems. I think as we were talking maybe before we started the podcast, like I've run revenue operations, marketing, and go-to-market strategy for three unicorns. I enjoy kind of that scaling up side of things. And I really enjoy building a brand, which is something hopefully like you encountered our brand and experienced it and had an impression on it as well too.
That's cool. I'll dig into that last part for sure, the build a brand part. So winding back the clock, you started the company, according to LinkedIn, on June 21. That was a year into COVID. What problem did you experience, did you see, that was screaming for something new?
Yeah, I mean, I was this executive at a series, call it D or E at the time, company, and I was just getting blown up with email. Like I'd wake up every morning and I'd spend 15 to 20 minutes of my day in like deflection and killing mode, right? So what can I get out? What can I do? And so I was in a very negative mindset as I was processing all this email. And so I was just getting rid of it, but it was putting that burden on me. And I was also seeing a lot of people not respecting my time, right? You say, hey, no, thank you. And they're like, okay, cool. But when do I get that 15-minute meeting? Or when can we get on the phone? Or when can we do whatever? And so I was just for fun, wrote an email that said, I don't know you. Here's my Venmo account. If you Venmo me 50 cents, I will guarantee I will look at your email. And people started sending me like more than that, like $5, $20. And then I threw on the nonprofit piece and I just got really good reactions from senders. It was new, it was different. And I started sharing it with other people and they said, oh my goodness, like when you describe it, people get it. And so I gave it to my friends and I kind of hacked it together and did that. And so for about a year, I kind of just ran it on the side, experimenting with problems, trying to understand why this has been tried in different forms before and how could we do that? And so, yeah, we can definitely talk about some of the experiments and the trials and all of that. So yeah, I guess I've both caused the problem and I lived the problem.
Yeah, at some point, you need to reach out, and email at the end is still a relatively good way to do it. It remains a numbers game, and that makes it a problem at the same time. It's not genuine. It's spamming people at the end, no matter how good the email is written, and no matter how much you try to address a problem that people have. So I really love the idea, you know, and like when I was gated with a person that I reached out to, I was like, wait a minute, this is a pretty interesting idea. It made me smile. And I think that's a fantastic conversation started in the first place. Wait a minute.
I love it. I realize we haven't really described for your audience like what we do. I can take like 30 seconds and just describe
it.
So people know. Yeah. I mean, at a fundamental level, we take email from people you don't know out of your inbox, move it to a side folder where you can still see it. And we send an email to those people saying, I don't know this email address. You can either donate to reach me, or if you happen to know me and you're sending from a new one, click here to like bypass the donation. And then you can request to do that and the user can acknowledge it. If somebody donates, and the typical donation starts at $2 and it can go up from there. Yep. If somebody donates, we take that email out of that side folder and we put it in the inbox. And that's what we do. And we typically remove 30 to 50% of a typical like executive's email. We've got people from junior levels all the way up to senior using it. And then on the flip side, and this is, I think, what you experienced, is the reply rate for a donated email is on average across all of our users, 46%. And so by killing the noise and your email getting to a clean inbox with a positive kind of contribution on top of it and creating kind of the right level of reciprocity, we drive really impressive connection rates and we're bringing people that respect people's time together.
Yeah, that really happened because the moment I decided I make the donation, the conversation started and it's still going. So that's fascinating in the first place. I wrote my book, The Remarkable Effect, and that's how I reacted. This is so simple, yet remarkable. But to your point, you said it's been tried before and obviously it didn't succeed. What have you done differently? What have you learned from that in order to create a company around it that does succeed?
Absolutely. So I think there have been a couple attempts. There's been attempts where you charge every single send micro transactions, right? So that whole concept of, you know, literally making it just a marginal cost for everybody. I think we kind of moved the cost to a different point in the funnel, right? Which is, let's make people think about it and only the people that really value the time donate versus every single sender. Because I think that whole effort like really required the entire sender community to be on board at the beginning. I think the other thing that we've done is people want to be more focused, but they don't want to do the work to be more focused, and they don't want to change their workflow. And so what we've done is we've set it right in email where it learns from your behavior. You don't have to change your email client. You don't have to change your systems, your workflow, and it just works. And I think that's a key part, which is you don't have to go in and set it up and configure it. We've gotten really good at, within a couple minutes, the thing is live and learned and trained. And it's not 100% accurate in the first week or two, but it's learning and you're training it and it's getting better. And so I think those were really critical things. You know, Bill Gates in 2004 had the quote, somebody said, "Bill, aren't you worried about spam?" And he said, "No." To some effect, he said, "No, somebody's going to put a marginal cost on email and it'll solve the problem." We've actually got a gentleman that worked for Bill Gates as his technical chief of staff and spent 3 years on this problem. And like he invested. And so I think we also, unlike a lot of technology companies that are like, let's throw a technology solution to the problem, I think we deeply understand the world of senders. I've been that my whole career. And so I think one thing that was really valuable early on, and a gentleman that's, you know, super senior at one of the top companies that powers all this outbound said to me, he's like, this needs to work for both sides. And so we spent a lot of time thinking through how do we create an experience, while to some degree awkward the first time you encounter it, is welcome and a positive experience for everybody. I think you chuckled when I kind of said the awkward part. That's, I think, what we're doing is we're crossing the chasm right now. And that's the part that I spend the most time thinking about.
It's true, because the moment you see it coming in, and I've actually had people responding to me in an interesting way as well. But some bot, but for some people that actually that I do know, I think they use it on a different email address. But still, every time I've experienced so far, it gets the conversation going. And I think that's good.
Yes.
So what is the opportunity if you get this right? If you get the balance massive, right?
Massive. There are 10,000 tools helping sellers and marketers pummel buyers.
Yeah.
We are not building the 10,000th and first tool. We're building the first tool for buyers. Somebody said there's marketing automation. And they said, holy crap, you're building buyer automation. That's the bigger vision. And if we do that, we're the trusted gatekeeper for your email. And what that gives us, you know, there are not a lot of those that are going to, you know, you're not going to have five trusted gate. You may have a 40 tool MarTech stack, but you're not going to have a 40 tool protect my inbox and my attention stack. And so I think building the trusted brand is a tremendous opportunity. And when you are the gatekeeper, you get to take little tolls along the way. We don't focus on how much can we take, but it's more like, if you're at that right point with creating connections, I think it's massively valuable. So it's a big bet. And I don't know if we'll succeed. I believe that the world needs what we're doing, especially when you think about ChatGPT and how more and more emails are sent every day. It's great to be able to share what we're doing with folks that think about it. So yes, imagine a world where instead of 100 emails getting sent and 2 replies, 10 emails get sent and 5 replies. It's a world that's better for everybody. And I believe that the ROI, if you're in sales and you're just getting ghosted all the time, I believe the ROI of like, wow, like I have a 50-50 chance of this person replying. You're going to spend more time on that email. You are going to make that email more personal. You're actually going to research it. I mean, if you think about it, the word personalization in MarTech does not actually mean researching the person and putting in relevant information to understand their problem. It means putting in a couple parameters and sending the email out, right? So what we're trying to do is bring more humanity to communication.
Let me make a small interruption here. Andy just made an excellent remark about the very thing that makes his solution remarkable. Instead of creating the 10,000th first marketing tool that does email just a bit better, they opted for being different. And their core objective? More humanity to communication. And with that, they didn't focus on creating a tool for the sender, but a solution for the buyer. A solution that enforces communication to be more human and relevant with every email that gets gated. It's a trait remarkable SaaS vendors master. They master curiosity and then focus on the essence, i.e. they start with the end in mind. And then they re-engineer the journey without bias or getting trapped into incremental thinking. And with that, they're creating new value opportunities and drive momentum from the start. You can master these traits as well. And the first step? Simply read my book. I've made the electronic version available for free. Just visit theremarkableeffect.com to grab your copy, and inspiration will spark within 10 minutes. Back to the interview. With that, everybody wins. It's interesting what you say about how it makes people think about sending quality, genuine email. Because at the end, you know, that's also your statistic. The moment you get, for example, the moment you do pay a donation to a charity of their choice, they're still not that everybody is responding. It still needs to be good. It still needs to be genuine. But at least you got attention.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, we do a lot of work to set expectations, right? The reply rate on average, and we will eventually start to share like individual reply rates if the user is okay with it. But the reply rate on average is 46%. That's high,
yeah.
But it's not 100%. I think we've been pretty good at setting the right expectations on that.
That's also what I experienced being a user myself since a couple of weeks, like at the beginning of the end of the year, I think. So on that journey, what has been the hardest nut to crack in respect to this?
It's crossing the chasm. We're thinking about it every day, right? So
Yeah.
I would say I'll get deep and soulful. Like you asked me a good question, I'll give you a good answer. So I think the sender side, you know, they always talk about the hard side and the easy side of the marketplace. Senders donating is the easy side, right? Like that just works. Like if you are a sender and you get this, you're probably going to try it. And then you're either going to get a good response or not, but you're going to have an interesting new experience and you may try it again. And eventually you're going to be like, wow, like I'm getting responses at really high rates. And, you know, so I see the senders go from, ugh, this sucks to, oh my God, I really want this world to exist for all of us. And so I think we've cracked the sender side really well. And I've spent a lot of time talking to people about that. I think the user side, there is some friction, right? Like you have to be comfortable putting in a little bit of friction into the process, but the friction of the process makes you better. So you have to, there's kind of three barriers to adoption. One is the worry, I'm going to miss an email. They're still over there. They're just not in your inbox, right? So that's like in the first week or two, and I'm sure we can build more technology.
Unbelievable, right?
Yeah. What we find is if people make it through the first 3 weeks, they never, ever leave. But they have to maybe check the gated folder once in a while. And so we've had some people be like, oh, I never checked it. I'm like, yeah, then you might miss something, right? Because our algorithm's not perfect. I think the second thing people fear is those conversations you talked about, right? Like you've got to be able to explain it. You've got to be somebody. We are not building a quiet filter. If you want a quiet filter, I can recommend other tools. We're building something where people are comfortable putting it in front of them. And I equate that to Calendly, right? Like it felt weird the first time you got a Calendly, but you explained it. And eventually people seen enough of them where they're like,
love it.
Oh, it's gated. It's Calendly. Like I'm good. So that's something we're just working through. And then I think the third thing is security. We never look at the contents of the emails, but to do what we do, Google requires us to be able to, in theory, see those. And so what we've seen is we do everything we do with metadata and looking at the relationship graph. We do not look at the contents of the email. We believe Google will always be better at that. And frankly, we think looking at data to pull data emails out will always fail. And happy to talk more about that. But Google to let us, we wish we could see the metadata in the header and move the email without seeing it. We aren't allowed to. So people look at it and they say, oh my goodness, what permissions am I giving you? And I think some people say, oh, will my company be okay with that stuff? And so that's another barrier that like, I don't know if we fully know how to cross yet. And so those are the three. And, you know, what I'd say is our word is, and then so I'm giving you the detailed answer, but we're highly viral with the people you don't know. We are not yet viral with the people you do know. And that is something that we're trying to figure out. And I think—
What do you mean that? Like, maybe that's like the people I don't know.
The people you don't know get gated challenge emails and they learn about it.
Yeah.
The people you do know don't even know you use the tool. And so that's both the beauty of it, but it also restricts our ability to grow faster.
Yeah. Okay. Got your point there.
So Don, if you're okay, stick gated on your email signature, share it out. You know, it's like— talk about it, do exactly what you're doing here. But that's the part where...
that's an interesting dilemma at the end. Yeah, because you won't get the virality from people that have started to use it. I mean, it starts at some point in time, of course, but then the network effect doesn't kick in.
Well, the people that are learning about it are salespeople, and those people are not our target users. They are the target that's doing that. And so that is something that has been one of the biggest learnings for us, is that we didn't build that piece of the virality into the model at the beginning, which is pushing us to think about the world differently and think around how do we evolve the product to make it more viral in ways that are positive for users.
How do you find your ideal customers? The whole discussion around segmentation and what is your ideal customer profile? It's not sales.
No,
it's the other end.
It's B2B buyer functions from senior level all the way down to manager. So if I would describe them really quickly, marketing, rev ops, product, engineering, finance, HR, all of those, IT and security.
All the people with buying power.
All the people with buying power. But I think with the world of PLG, it's not just the senior people anymore. It's all of those people. So people are like, oh, I'm not senior enough to use Gated. No, yes, you are. If you're feeling the pain. And so I think that's been our core initial persona. You know, obviously, if we were to integrate it into your CRM all of a sudden, and we do see sales leaders use it, but like sales people would start to use it more and more. But we discourage, you know, sales or CS or support from using it on their work. We've found, and we're still trying to figure this out, massive uptake on personal Gmails. But we don't monetize those people. I think people have the pain on their personal email. They just have a different type of pain because that's a marketing email pain, not a sales prospecting email pain.
Yeah, okay. Gotcha. Why won't people use simply the spam filter?
Ah, great question. Yeah, that's what I talked about. So Google and Microsoft are world-class at using data to determine what to pull out. But here's the problem, right? Like if they're too aggressive, they pull out too much stuff and you're like, God damn it, I missed that thing. And if they're not aggressive enough, you're like, this thing's useless, right? So they're stuck in a quandary that will never be perfect. And so their paradigm is everything should be in the inbox and we're going to use data to determine what to pull out. Our paradigm is maybe different, which is only people you know and trust should be in the inbox and everything else is going to go to a side folder. I think that's a better way to like break apart your inbox approach. I mean, when was the last time you actually checked your spam folder, right? Like, and versus with Gated, like there might be something in there that you check. And if you check it every 2 to 3 days, you'll be fine. What we're doing is we're breaking apart the review of email into all the good stuff and all the people who have donated to me. And like, that's what I do every morning. And I go in with a positive mindset. Everything in there is good. And I'm in a receptive mode. True. And then a couple times a week, I'll check the Gated folder and see what's there. And over time, I think we can get to a place where we could surface like, here's what might be something that you might want to look at and take a look at that. So hopefully that described the difference that we see with spam, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And that's where the big difference is. I like your point about the fact that you used to go in your email with a negative mindset, all the stuff that's in there. And now it starts with all the good stuff, all the people that you know and that you trust, and the rest is kept from you. Interesting thing at the end is I looked at your website also in being interested in monetization, and your free version is free. Then your professional version is free. And your enterprise version, guess what? It's free. Mm-hmm. So how do you monetize this?
I mean, we take 30% of every donation today. The deep belief is everybody has this pain, but not everyone is willing to pay to solve the pain. I also think that, I don't know if in your neighborhood you have dogs and walking by, but I don't believe that you should have to pay to clean up the dog poop that your neighbor's dog dumped on your lawn. We're not calling all bad email dog poop, but we believe deeply that senders that respect your time can pay a little bit to keep your inbox clean for you. You know, we do go back and forth a little bit on, we're giving a lot of value and we're giving it for free. So could it be like $5 a month or something like that? And then we have a lot of people being like, man, I'd pay $50 a month for this thing. Yeah. I really hope that we can keep it free forever. I think we're figuring out if that's the right approach or if adding a little bit of monetary cost to it can allow us to scale bigger and grow faster.
Yeah. No, I think it's a great model. You know, recently I had an interview with Matt Ostenick from Grateful. He's built a platform, which is also about gifting, whereby you decide as a company to donate a percentage to a charity that is chosen by your customer. And that whole model really works well. It creates this triangle of people that just win from there. I think it's a good model.
The behavioral effects are powerful, right? Like we let every user, this is another thing, I don't know if I'm guessing you've realized, but in case you haven't, like every user gets to set their own minimum price to reach them. We start everyone off and default everyone to $2. That's like the minimum, because anything below that, credit card fees will eat us alive. But you shouldn't cost the same to reach as the kid that graduated from college this year, but you do on LinkedIn. And you also don't control that. And so what we've done is we've given everyone the ability to set their own price within limits. And so I think that creates a really interesting dynamic. But the average or the median minimum donation is like $2.25, or like the average would be around there.
Yeah, true.
But the average actual donation is closer to $7. And so what we see is 57% of people donate more than the minimum.
What is that about?
For a number of reasons. If you think about it, that effectively covers our cost of the 70% we give to the nonprofit. And you can start to get a sense for how much we're making from every donation. I think the psychological impacts of that are really fascinating, right? Like, why do people give more? We're still studying all of those different things.
Exactly.
Does giving more get a higher response rate? Yes, slightly. It's probably like 40 versus 50%. And so it's really interesting to watch the behavioral dynamics of how this changes behavior. And then you're a user, right? So you feel a little sense of obligation, but you probably don't. If it's just a terrible email, hopefully you don't reply, right? And so that's a really interesting balance to strike as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's interesting to how that works, where people are confronted with the gate and then they see how to get through the gate. Really recently, someone, I think maybe it's not the email that I've got registered, but I know the person still made the donation because it came in through another email and decided for a newsletter that it was valuable enough to get into my inbox. So it wasn't even selling. It was a newsletter.
It's interesting. I would generally advise people not to donate for newsletters and just say they, like if you've signed up, to say they know you and get through that way. But it's
exactly.
There are some use cases we are still learning and refining as we go.
Exactly. The idea was super simple. You started just doing it in a non-scalable way, just sending emails to people that you don't know them and that they could get to your inbox if they would donate something to an account that you provided. What has been the hardest thing for you to get the growth going and to get the momentum going with your company?
We built the brand early. I think we talked a lot about it and we got a lot of people excited. I think if you've seen our manifesto, like we didn't just write a couple words, but we literally wrote like an interactive manifesto that talks about the pain and what we're trying to do. And I think that was big for me, which was not everybody is a potential user of our product on day one. We hope that eventually everyone will use it, but everyone can believe in the change we're trying to bring. So I think a lot of the brand stuff has been really powerful. Like pretty much if you're in B2B, you know about us and you're starting to understand us and learn. So that's been good. I'd say just the natural like word of mouth and like we may not have like sign up virality, but like, man, I see it every day, right? Which is some sender sends an email like, this is cool. They drop in their Slack. Everyone's talking about it. Like I get those like shares like daily. And so there's a lot of like discussion around what we're doing. You know, it's like every time I connect with somebody on their LinkedIn, they're like, oh, yeah, I've seen you. I understand it. Like I've been thinking about this for a while. So I think there's a lot of that. You know, now what we're really spending the time on is, okay, how do we convert? A lot of people are like, and I start asking people the question, like, why didn't you sign up for Gated yet? And so that's the part that I think we're just learning on and like, what's been that hurdle for you? And I think we're getting smarter and smarter on that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I wonder it's a very interesting question in itself. Like what's keeping people from not doing it? So what are the obstacles to overcome? So word of mouth, which is music to my ears. I wrote my book, The Remarkable Effect, starts with that. Did you see at some point a tipping point where things just started to go faster than normal?
We haven't seen that yet. I mean, we're growing at a nice like 20% monthly. But you know, my job is how do I get to 10x a month and all of that stuff. So I look at Calendly. It's a very similar journey, right? Like I was running a virtual assistant outsourcing company, helping people schedule when Calendly was early on. I spent some time talking to Tope, the CEO. We've got some friends at Calendly. They went for a long time kind of in like, here it is. And it's like, this is different and this is weird and is it acceptable? And then they had that tipping point and we haven't had ours yet, but I believe deeply in what we're doing.
Yeah. The solution is valuable. I think the model is valuable. It's just getting over that certain hump. And the question is which one it is. Now, the media story of Calendly. I mean, I use Calendly every single day. Love it.
And the first time you got one, what was your reaction to it?
This is what I've been waiting for, possibly.
Ah, okay. So maybe you saw the same thing with Gated too.
Yeah. What is it? Exactly. I mean, I've always been on the outreach of looking for tools that can make my life easier. And Calendly definitely is. I tried a couple of other tools in that range and ended up with, okay, Calendly is the best for that. Which is also funny because, I mean, it doesn't do that much.
but it doesn't do that much. No.
No. It's maybe also the simplicity of it. Yeah. So what have you learned in that process to start building the traction that you got today? I mean, 20% is still 20% month over month.
I mean,
what has been important to that?
I've run sales and marketing machines multiple times. And maybe this is where we talk a little bit about the brand side. But, you know, at CultureAmp, we help people collect, measure, and act on employee feedback. I joined around 4 or 5 million in revenue. And we took it to 80 million in 4 years. And it's now, I think, double that again. So it's growing really fast. And
yeah, that's a fascinating story indeed.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the brand was a big, powerful piece of it, right? And it's hard to describe, but we named it something that was intuitive. And if you look at us versus our competitor, which admittedly is growing just as fast, but like, I think we defined the space. They were Lattice, we're CultureAmp, right? There's a lot of Lattice that do different things. You know what CultureAmp's doing. I spent a lot of time, you know, how do we name gated and how do we do that? Creating something that's bigger than the product itself that people can get around, I think, is really important. The power of community, which I think we did even better at CultureAmp, which I'm still thinking through, like, how do we tap into? But I've got an article on my LinkedIn around the power of community. I think a lot of people like try it and don't do it. But we ran 280 events a year at CultureAmp. We had events teams in every country. We had meetups, stand-ups. We had a Slack channel with 10,000 people in it. Like, all of those things. And, you know, we ran a global conference. It was a 3-day conference. And I mean, 3 days is more than 1% of your working year. And people would take that time out every year and they would budget for it. And it's like, so that's fun when you get to do that stuff, right? And it builds something bigger than the company. You know, Salesforce has done that. And, you know, other people have done that. And I think that's a fun thing to do.
As we for those companies, it really helps finding your peers that are trying to level up their company as well. I mean, CultureAmp around, you know, amping the culture. Of course, the tool side, but there's also what else do you do in order to make this happen? That's where community really kicks in. I think for Gated, that's different because you just do it for people. You know, it's installed, like I say, in a minute of your life, emails get gated automatically. So what else do you need to learn? There's nothing more to learn.
I mean, at the same time, like, no one's geeking out in like user groups around Calendly either, right? Like, no one's sitting there saying, hey, what was your latest hack or whatever it would be? I have found some cool hacks. Like, I start every meeting 5 minutes after because it's impossible to end a meeting 5 minutes early, but it's totally possible to start a meeting 5 minutes late. And so, like, there are little fun things like that that my productivity mind goes towards. But generally, like, no one's trying to outthink or be like, how can I use Calendly in a different way or an interesting way? We do have a new product that we're, you know, and maybe in the last minute or two, it'd be fun, given the way you tick, I can start to talk about what we're thinking about there. It'd be fun to get your take on it and we can share with your audience. By the time it comes out, I think we'll be in market. But we definitely think beyond email. Everyone wants us to go deeper in email, right? Like, make it more intelligent, serve it up, like, get it perfectly relevant. I think there's limits to that. But we see the pain in other areas. I think for us, we think about how can you express your norms, what you're interested in, what is important to you, and people will start to bend towards your will. What we've got and we've done is basically a tool that you can create any button you want that you can describe, hey, here's who I am and here's what's important to me. And then you can create any button you want. And so it's supposed to be like, hey, ask me to make an intro for you or book a meeting with me or request a meeting from me. And you can put any donation price you want on those. Like, we're thinking about people that are, we're calling them kind of connected creators out there as our beta for this. Of you get hit on every single channel and you're getting pummeled all the time. And both from your network and from your known, and you're getting, like, I get asks every day from people I know. And like, how do I determine which ones I want to do and which ones I don't? And I want to channel how I help people. And so I think there's this, we're thinking beyond email. We're thinking beyond just stopping the noise, but really continuing to think about like creating like human to human connection. We do think deeply about if you explain your norms and what's important to you, people may actually change how they communicate with you before they send the email rather than after.
Exactly. Funny that no one really has kind of got to that level, but that's maybe the missing link, the missing piece. So kind of final question. You've been an entrepreneur for a long time. This is not your first company. What would be, from all the lessons that you've learned at the companies you work for and your own companies, what would be a do and what would be a don't that you'd like to share with aspiring tech entrepreneurs on the mission?
I guess I don't think too much in the abstract. Like, every time somebody comes to me for advice, I'm like, okay, let me spend 5 minutes asking you a couple questions first. I'll give you an example, right? Which is like, I'm really good at wiring. You can hire a demand gen person to bolt on more SEM, but that's not really going to change the DNA of the company in a way that's going to be like differentiated and scalable. Like I had one CEO come to me. He's like, I want to hire a demand gen person. I was like, are you sure? Because you're doing this thing where your users could literally be like talking about the experiences you're delivering, and then you could wire that through the entire funnel, right? And so for me, a lot of my advice is non-generic, but it's much more around figure out what's unique in your customer journey and then figure out how to wire that through. So I guess I tend to always do that. Like, give me 5 minutes and I'll give you like very valuable specific advice versus like, just do this general thing. So that would be kind of like part one. In terms of don't, I mean, I think the learning I've had, particularly with this capital market, is I think a couple times we've invested before that hockey stick. We're like, okay, the hockey stick's coming. And I think particularly with our business where we're crossing a chasm, I think in retrospect, I would rather hold that powder until the hockey stick does come and deal with those problems versus try to fund those. And I think that's also like where the funding environments are going, right? That one's definitely all own that we've twice been like, okay, it's coming. And we could feel it. But it comes, it doesn't like, it goes bump. And then it kind of like settles back and keeps growing at a normal pace.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so like for me, I don't control when Tim Ferriss or Snoop Dogg or whoever tweets, oh my God, I'm using Gated. This is so dope. But when that happens is like, when we start to become a debate within popular culture, and we see it, like it happens on Twitter sometimes, I think that's really interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's luck to an extent as well. There needs to be predictable traction. And that's where it's interesting to kind of start throwing funding at the fire. But before that, really, really dangerous thing, because you're always far too optimistic. Good point. Yes. Okay. Well, so where can people go to find out more about Gated or to say hi to you?
Gated.com to find out about Gated. It is completely free to sign up. If you believe in what we're doing, like not just you, but all these folks, like please share what we're doing, talk about it online. Like when you see it, like don't be afraid of it. Welcome it. It's actually a good thing to get gated rather than a bad thing. I think that's an interesting thing if we can help with that perception. And then, yeah, if people are really interested, like dropping me a note at andy@gated.com is like, if somebody donates, I will respond. Like I drink our own Kool-Aid and at least everyone gets a response from me. I don't guarantee a meeting, but like I guarantee a response.
Yeah, same for me. Well, thank you very much. Fascinating story. Believer of the product, and I've been using it proudly for weeks now. Glad we talked. Interesting journey, fascinating journey. And yeah, you're up to something remarkable here. So keep going.
Thank you, Don. I really enjoyed this serendipity and Gated that we connected in the first place. That's great.
Exactly. See what happens indeed. Thank you. And this ends my conversation with Andy, and I hope you enjoyed it. If so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Andy Mowat, CEO of Gated. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.